three for now and go to four. Michelle Merceri versus Deutsche Bank.
I'm Ann Marshall. May it please the court, I'll reserve 2 minutes, please.
All right, 2 minutes.
I represent Deutsche Bank. This is an action to determine whether a promissory note and deed of trust can be enforced through a foreclosure. This case comes to the court on a discretionary review after the trial court certified the question whether the Washington tolling statute incorporated into the federal bankruptcy code tolls the statute of limitations.
How did that become the issue, whether or not the 416-230 was incorporated into a bankruptcy statute? How did that become the issue?
Well, I believe that the trial court was primarily relying on Hazel v. Van Beek, which looked at the U.S. Bankruptcy Code 11 U.S.C. 108C1, and Hazel involved a case where there was a bankruptcy filing, and the court was looking at whether or not the state statute of limitations tolled, or whether there was tolling actually under the bankruptcy code itself. So
wasn't that a judicial lien or statutory lien case?
Correct. So the court in Hazel...
456, not 416?
Correct. But the court in Hazel was looking at the U.S. bankruptcy code to see if there was tolling provided in the bankruptcy code. So, and the court looked at this 11 U.S.C. 108 and determined that bankruptcy code provision itself did not provide for tolling. The court then went on to look at equitable tolling to see if that would apply and determined that it did not. And I think the trial court in our case was then looking at the same, at the analysis that the court in Hazel had, but did not appreciate the distinction that case arose in the judgment lien statute for which there is no state tolling provision, which there is in RCW 416.
What happened below just with regard to 416-230? I mean, just reading the plain language of that statute, that an action is stayed by injunction or statutory prohibition. When the commencement of an action is stayed by injunction or a statutory prohibition, the time of the continuance of the injunction or prohibition shall not be part of the time limited for the commencement of the action. I mean, what did the trial court say about that language?
I don't know. I mean, the trial court, he heard oral argument and then an opinion was issued later. He did not issue a decision and simply granted the partial motion for summary judgment. Then upon reconsideration, he included the reliance on Hazel as the reason for his decision. And we, of course, believe it doesn't apply at all. I mean, the judgment lien statute does not have a tolling provision. If you want to get tolling in that case, you do look at equity, and you don't look at the statutory provision under the statute of limitations. So we think, actually, the analysis in Hazel itself answers the question, because the court there itself says this is not a statute of limitations case. It would have been a different result. The tolling statute speaks for itself, and then the other states' decisions that all have the same or similar statutes, who have looked at the exact same provision in the bankruptcy code, have also found full tolling for the time that a bankruptcy stay is in effect. Additionally, when this court accepted discretionary review, it allowed Deutsche to include tolling on non-judicial foreclosures that were pending. We think that question is answered by two cases out of this division, both Bingham versus Lechner and Edmondson versus Bank of America. Either tolling, whether it's tolling under the bankruptcy stay or tolling due to that, even just that last most recent nonjudicial foreclosure would move the statute of deadline, the statute of limitations deadline to pass the date of the hearing, which was June 2016. And, of course, together they would put.
Was that in Bingham versus Lechner, was that really an issue about whether or not nonjudicial foreclosures told the statute?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. There was apparently some agreement between the parties in the case that the nonjudicial foreclosure would toll the statute.
Are we bound by the parties' agreement on that thing?
Well, when you look at the court's ruling, the Court of Appeals did hold the trial court's reading of RCW 61-24-0406 was correct. I mean, it does seem to be a ruling.
Nobody argued it wasn't, though, right?
Right. I would say that I've had agreed motions that were denied. So
usually for an unwarranted continuance.
Shouldn't admit that, but if the court does seem to have a holding that the trial court's determination on that was correct. And then later, this court, in just last year, in Edmondson versus Bank of America, looked at whether the NOD, the notice of default that was issued, was stopped the statute of limitations from running. And in that case, it was very close. It was about a 1 week before the statute ran, and the court held that was sufficient.
But, I mean, that wasn't really a tolling situation, though. I mean, that was whether or not if you get your notice of default in before the statute runs, you're...
Yeah, to me, I mean, some of the cases refer to that as tolling. To me, it should just be stopped because
right.
You've filed, and so the statute should stop running. It shouldn't be tolling it. But I think that that term gets thrown in there sort of interchangeably. So whether it's the nonjudicial foreclosure or the bankruptcy stay, either one would put us past the date that that motion was heard.
What's your response to the other side's argument that just you could have trotted to bankruptcy court and automatically gotten relief from the stay, just by almost as if by filing the motion?
Yeah, and I think there's four issues on that, on why the bankruptcy stay is so different from a procedural step. One, it injects, and I don't know if I'll be able to list them all, but one, the uncertainty that would bring would be huge. It then makes your statute of limitations and whether it is tolling depending on the value of some property. So for those plaintiff's attorneys that want to sleep at night, they want to know what the statute of limitations is and how you can calculate it to the day. You do not want to find out that a property may have had a huge mold problem and surprise it never had any equity and you could have gone in and terminated the stay. It is a litigated proceeding. You have to present evidence of value. It can start off as a 7. It can change to an 11. One of the cases we cited, it started off as an 11, and it changed to a 7. There just is no requirement in the tolling statute that you have to litigate it to terminate it in order to get the benefit.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes in rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Susan Fulmer, and I represent the respondent, Michelle Merceri. We're here today because the trial court followed the law, and we're asking this court to follow the law. Although there's a lot of side issues raised, the main question is, does the bankruptcy stay toll the statute of limitations? And Hazel broadly addressed that and said the bankruptcy stay itself does not toll the statute.
I'm not persuaded that Hazel is the case that is controlling here. I mean, it's not about 416, and this case is about 416, is it not?
Right, and I agree with Your Honor that that's the case. I don't think where they're talking about the confluence between the bankruptcy stay and tolling, I don't think there's any one case that addresses the issue. There are cases on the bankruptcy stay, and there are cases on RCW 4.16.230. McDermott actually addressed both back in 1918 and said the bankruptcy stay is not a statutory prohibition, and it's not an injunction.
But that was before the bankruptcy code. I mean, they also said there's no statutory prohibition against the maintenance of a foreclosure action after the bankruptcy proceeding has been instituted. I mean, so.
Well, it's before the 1976 bankruptcy code, or 78. But there was the 1898 bankruptcy code. And I think to understand McDermott, you need to understand the similarities between the current code and the 1898 code. And we've included that in our appendix, the full 1898 code. The current bankruptcy stay precludes the commencement or continuation of any action against the debtor. And to understand that, you need to look at four provisions in the 1898 code. One is Section 2, which means that, which says that there's exclusive jurisdiction over bankruptcy property. And that was upheld in the Bardas v. Howard and Bank case, the United States Supreme Court, that's cited in McDermott and cited in our brief. Section 9 automatically protects the bankrupt from the commencement of civil suits, exactly like the current code. Section 11 says there's an automatic stay prohibiting the continuation of any existing suit. So those are identical. And there's a question in Section 17. They've raised the issue that foreclosure is not a case for which a discharge would be a release. But that's not true.
What if, in this case, Deutsche Bank had gone to the bankruptcy court, asked for relief from stay. The bankruptcy judge said, you know, I can't believe a house that there's a $2.8 million loan on it is worthless, so your motion for relief is denied. How would that have affected the stay?
Oh, I think in that case there would be a court order that would be extending the stay, and I think that would be a difference. There's no court order here that would be an injunction. Washington law is
very...
This
is going to be a different situation every time someone moves for a relief of stay. There's no black letter rule here. It's just whatever a particular judge rules in a particular case in bankruptcy.
No, not necessarily, Your Honor. Here, that didn't happen. Here, they didn't ask. And there's plenty of case law under RCW 4.16.230 that says if you don't ask, you don't get any tolling. If you have the opportunity to seek your remedy and you don't take it,
well,
you don't get any tolling.
Did they have to seek a remedy?
Pardon?
As I understand it, at least the case law seems to suggest that any acts by creditors to enforce their lien against the debtor's property are foreclosed during bankruptcy without leave of court. Isn't that correct?
Well, that is correct, but...
So, There is a stay until the court gives you permission to do something otherwise.
That's right. Section 362 is a very long statute, and it's also included in our appendix. It's a very long statute. The very beginning says, this is what you can't do. The rest of the statute says, here's how you can do what you want to do, including 362D2. 362D2 says, like, there's a door here. All you have to do is turn the knob and open the door, and you can walk right through to state court.
So you're saying that they didn't exercise due diligence?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And there's plenty of cases.
Are you aware of some case that says due diligence is at issue in a statute of limitations case?
Yes, there are numerous cases applying, cited in our brief. One of those is Siemens v. Walgreen.
And aren't those cases more equitable limitations?
They all address...
Or equitable tolling, I'm sorry.
Right. Well, no, Siemens v. Walgreen addressed RCW 4.16.230. That was the case where there was a state legislator who was being sued. And the state constitution doesn't have any provision like 362D2. It says you may not serve a state legislator while the legislature is in session. I think it's 14 days after. The trial court said, and the appellate court said, that's a good reason to have tolling. He could do nothing, right?
But that was not a question of statutory tolling. That was a question of there was no statute, and so they used the equitable tolling, did they not?
No, I don't believe so. They used the state constitution,
right,
which they considered to be a statutory prohibition.
But that's still not 416, though.
They did apply 416.230.
Not 416.040.
No.
All right. And we're talking about a case that arose under 416-040. And the tolling provision that applies specifically to cases that arise under this statute, right?
Right. I don't think with regard to a statute of limitations, whether it's 3 years or 6 years, is dispositive in terms of RCW 4.16.230. The cases we list in our brief show that under every circumstance, every statute of limitations, every type of case, conversion, tort, personal injury, contract, receivership, the Washington courts have never applied tolling when the person has a remedy, when the plaintiff has a remedy and doesn't take it. And those cases are listed in our brief. There are a few circumstances where there have been granted tolling under 4.16.230, and that is where the person had absolutely no possibility of seeking their remedy and filing their cause of action. And going back to what this court talked about in terms of 4.16.230.
I don't think the overhead is on. No, now it is. Okay.
Yeah. One of the things to note about 4.16.040 and this entire statute, the plain language says, actions shall be commenced within 6 years. They want this court to construe 4.16.230 when the commencement of an action is prohibited by injunction or statutory prohibition, that the time is excluded. And if you look at 4.16.170 in the same statutory scheme, it says that that is commenced only by filing a judicial action. So to the extent Bingham, which is, again, the parties agree, and Edmondson, where it wasn't central to the court's determination of tolling and tolling wasn't addressed, those cases are distinguishable. There is no dispute that Deutsche Bank here never commenced an action within...
Are you talking about the nonjudicial foreclosure argument that they're making?
Correct. No. Correct. Well, and also just 4.16.230. Any suggestion that tolling is permitted for instance, a nonjudicial foreclosure is contrary to the plain language of the statute. A nonjudicial foreclosure doesn't commence an action, and it doesn't stop the running of the statute of limitations. But I think that when you look at Hazel, McDermott, the 1898 Bankruptcy Code, the current Bankruptcy Code, and all of the cases applying 4.16.230 and tolling, they have been unable to find a single case in Washington that says they get tolling when they could turn that knob, open the door, and continue with their foreclosure. In addition, one of the things that's important to note and that Hazel did address, it discussed the equity situation. And Hazel said, if your bankruptcy petition is filed here, bankruptcy goes on here.
You know, but, you can finish, but I'm just saying that we're talking about judicial liens, which is just a totally different situation than what we have here.
It is.
But go ahead.
Hazel's not the only case. There's Weyerhaeuser, and there's all the other cases that we discussed. You have to look at the very broad guidance given by Hazel in conjunction with the very limited application of statute of limitations and tolling in Washington in all the cases that we've cited. And with that, we'd ask the court to affirm the trial court. Thank you, Your Honor.
You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. First on McDermott. McDermott is a 1918 case under the 1898 Bankruptcy Code. Absolutely, the stay did not stop that foreclosure from proceeding because it was not pending before the person filed bankruptcy. It does not apply. The court said that there is no stay in effect, and that is why those parties could have filed their suit and named the bankruptcy trustee. It did not have a stay as to the estate property like the modern
code. So you're saying that McDermott is still good law and it does apply, but that the circumstances are not present here?
No, I mean, when the new bankruptcy code came in, it made property all part of the estate, and the automatic stay became much broader. You can't sue the trustee. You can't sue somebody after they have filed bankruptcy. That would be stayed. It had a much narrower automatic stay that no longer applied under the modern code. And remember in this case that the bankruptcy trustee was appointed in the Chapter 7, and the court permitted the bankruptcy trustee to market the property to sell to creditors. Not that it matters, because any automatic stay should toll, but in this case, in 2011, the trustee was permitted to market, and in 2012, there was an order allowing the sale of the property. So there was something being done regarding the property. When they talk about tolling and how you have to have a remedy and you don't take it, every one of those cases has to do with something that does not rise to the level of an injunction or an automatic stay. There are procedural steps that even within those cases say that it would be different if there was a stay from resulting from another case. They just didn't rise to that level.
Thank you. That concludes this matter.